Are you looking to live the abundant life no matter what your income is? You're in the right place. This is the podcast that will teach and inspire you to live better. Whether you want to earn more, save more, or improve your relationship with money or people, it's time for the 90 Days to Abundance podcast, brought to you by SavingsAngel.com. Here's your host, the Chief Executive Angel of SavingsAngel.com, Josh Elledge.
And thank you, Cece, and welcome to show number 13 of 90 Days to Abundance. And what a lucky show it is, because we've got Amanda Grossman from frugalconfessions.com who's going to be sharing with us some great tips for getting out of debt, staying out of debt, spending less, and enjoying life. And also, if you're interested in attending free movie screenings, Amanda's got some tips on that as well. And without further ado, let's get to my interview with Amanda Grossman from frugalconfessions.com. So, Amanda, thank you so much for joining us on the 90 Days to Abundance podcast. And I actually reached out to you because I love the work that you're doing. And, I'm passionate about this subject of teaching people how to have abundance. And I think that there's a lot of us who might look at a subject like frugality and say, ugh, that just sounds yucky. But I love your take on it. So Amanda, I'm hoping you could kind of explain a little bit about your background and then maybe kind of get into your philosophy on what it means to be frugal.
Absolutely. And first off, just thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm very excited to be here. Basically, I grew up on a dairy farm in rural PA, where all the Amish are. So it was a very unique experience in my childhood. And you know, the Amish, they're very into saving money, being conservative, living on a farm, a family farm. We were very much into frugality, squeezing our pennies, doing everything we could to make it work. And so I grew up with this real sort of, you know, frugality, salt of the earth in my veins. And that rooted me from early on. However, I got into my 20s and I started noticing that there was more to life. There was more to life than counting my pennies. There was more to life than sitting at home on a Friday or Saturday night, smug because I didn't spend, you know, $40 like everybody else is spending. And I wanted more out of life. And so I sort of started going down that path and started realizing that just because you're frugal does not mean that you have to miss out on life. And that's how I sort of developed what I call frugal decadence. And I totally live in frugal decadence. It's very possible to do. And I encourage and show others how to do that as well.
So how would you explain what that means when you say frugal decadence?
Yeah, so basically it's still getting all of the things that you want, all the experiences that you want, but never paying as much as everybody else is going to. And in so doing that, in not paying what everybody else is going to pay, you're still going to be saving for the future. You're still going to be saving for a healthy retirement.
Now, but Amanda, if you're not paying as much, though, doesn't that mean that you're robbing yourself from some of the fun that might be associated with those purchases?
Oh, absolutely not, because you're still going to get those purchases. You're still going to get those experiences. I'm just going to show you these tips and hacks, these frugal hacks or debt hacks or whatever sort of hacks to get there and just pay much less for it.
So, but does this mean that you need to be an extreme cheapskate, I guess, is what I'm asking?
Oh, absolutely not. Yes, there are different levels of frugality. And though I have bordered on cheap before, I'm certainly not cheap at the moment. Basically, it's, you know, I'm not an extreme couponer, and I don't expect other people to be an extreme couponer, because I think that it's a real waste of time to spend 20 hours a week going through coupon booklets. I mean, yep. You could be doing so much more with your life. So I show people that you can still be entertained. You can still go out with your buddies. You can still you know, purchase the things that you want to just at so much less cost. For example, you know, you want to see the new movies. Like my husband and I, we absolutely love going to the movies, and that's something we will always prioritize in our budget. But you might think, oh my God, she's supposed to be frugal. Why are they spending all that money? Because everybody knows how expensive movie theaters are. Well, something that we do is we seek out free pre-screenings of movies. So we get to see some of the latest flicks, even before they're out in theater, completely free.
So you got to tell us, how do you do that?
Actually, I'll have to send you the websites, because there's a few websites that I use. Okay. And off the top of my head, I can't remember the exact names.
Okay, so we'll put those, if you'll share those with me, then I'll put those absolutely in the show notes for this episode.
Yes, absolutely.
So Amanda, let me ask you the question. I try to ask this of all my guests. What does abundance mean to you?
I guess, okay, to me, abundance means that you are experiencing the kind of life that you want to without making sacrifices that aren't acceptable to you. So abundance to me would be, you know, I'm very much into traveling, and my husband is as well. In fact, we met while we were both living in Japan together, and travel is just very important to us. And if we were to sacrifice that because we wanted to, you know, save X amount of money in a bank account, that would not be an abundant life to me.
And so, Amanda, can you tell me about the debt manipulator course that you've designed?
Absolutely. So, you know, going down that same vein of what I just am so passionate about, hacking away at anything, right? So this is about debt hacking. My husband and I, we collectively in our 20s, we're in our early 30s now, in our 20s, we had $59,496-ish worth of debt that we racked up.
Yep.
And this is actually pretty typical debt. I mean, we're obviously not spenders, that would say otherwise, but this is for student loans, and he purchased a car. And then when we were engaged, we had our engagement ring loan that he had taken out. So you put that all together, and that was a huge chunk of debt. Now, by the time that we were engaged in 2009, we had $25,000 left. And we sort of made it our mission to get out of debt by our wedding day. And not only that, but we wanted to pay cash for our wedding. We wanted to purchase a home, so put a down payment on a home. And we didn't want to wait that long. We wanted to get married, you know, as soon as we could, which ended up being 7 months away. So setting that tight deadline, setting our priorities right, knowing that it was so important to us to start our marriage off right, we really learned how to hack our debt and how to get those dates just to be much closer than creditors wanted us to. And that's sort of what I've put together in this course.
And what are some of the biggest tips that you'd recommend to people who do want to get out of debt, and they're staring at that, you know, 50,000 plus in combined total debt and thinking, oh my gosh, there's just no way. This just feels insurmountable. It really is going to take us, you know, 10, 15, 20 years to do.
Absolutely. I mean, the first thing I want to do is just give them a big hug. Oh my goodness. I mean, I feel for these people because we were in the same position. And it's really about, number one, just making that, like building that momentum. And that's what some of these tips I'm about to tell you are really going to do. Because if you have some wins, if you see that, hey, my creditors want me to be out of debt in like 2049, you know, there's no way I want to be in debt that long. And then you use some of these tips, then you're gonna knock it out of the ballpark. One of the things is, and I've never seen another personal financial blogger talk about this, but this is just a really easy way, on the same pay that you're making right now and on the same amount of money that you're paying right now to your creditors, if you have credit card debt, that debt is compounded daily. So what you wanna do is you take your minimum payment that you send in anyway, you divide it by 2, and 15 days before the minimum payment is due, send in half of it. And then when the minimum payment is due, you send in the other half of it. And what that does is that takes, when they receive your payment, that's 15 days that small denomination, whatever it is, $55, $100, $20, that does not get compounded daily in the interest calculations. And it may not sound like it makes a big difference, but one of the things that the debt manipulator does is it has this workbook. and you input your specific debts and your specific interest rates and your specific minimum payments, and it spits out a date for you. And when you make that change where you're sending in that payment 15 days ahead of time, it makes a tremendous difference. You're talking like you can shave off 6 months. Some people even shaved off years from their debt release date.
That's amazing. So by just simply by paying half of that payment 15 days early.
Absolutely. And that's what happens with, you know, if you think about it on the other way, compounded daily interest, it's against you. So yeah. Why not use it for you?
And did you say that you had one more tip that you were going to share?
Yeah, absolutely. There, you know, people might not think that there's a rhyme or reason to how you should pay off your debt. You send in the minimums for each of your debtor, each of your creditors. You think you're doing well, and you are by most standards. But if you want to get out of debt earlier, you need to choose a strategy that's going to get you out of debt earlier. And that means you're going to prioritize your debts. Now, the way to get out of debt with paying the least amount of interest as possible is called the avalanche method. And basically what it is you take your debts, you list them out from highest interest rate to lowest interest rate, regardless of the principal amount that you owe. And that's how you're going to pay. You pay the minimum on every single one because you never want to miss your minimum payments. But then any extra money that you find from a tax return, from some of the nuggets we unleash in this course in your current paycheck, anything like that, you put that on the first debt that has the highest interest rate. And as you get out of that debt, you roll that entire payment into your next debt down. And this strategy of just paying on your highest interest rate debt and then rolling that payment into your next minimum payment, paying the minimum on all of your debts the entire time, is going to get you out of debt years earlier.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And so so what you're saying is that there isn't one person that has the trademark on that method.
No, there isn't. But I do have to say that's just one method. That's the one that's going to get you out of debt paying the least interest. Yeah. There's also the tsunami method, and there's also the snowball method. And The reason why I want to bring those up is because part of the reason a lot of people don't pay their debt off early has nothing to do with numbers at all. It's because they are not set up almost to pay that debt off early. For example, let's say you owe money to your father, and then you owe, you know, on a car loan, and then you owe on a student loan rate. Because you owe money to your father, and perhaps that relationship has tension there, you may not feel good about yourself. You may not feel good about your debt load. And now all of a sudden you're sort of in this like overwhelmed, you know, state. Maybe you're avoiding each other a little bit. Maybe there's, you know, some sort of tension there or whatever. Fill in the blank for whatever your own situation is. With the tsunami method, you actually pay off the debt that has the most emotional baggage for you first.
Wow.
And even though it may not be the highest interest rate or the highest principal amount, paying that debt off that is like a weight on your shoulders will just build that momentum and get you going, and then you feel like you can pay the other ones off. And so it's not all about numbers. So I do want to mention that there are three different methods. We go through this in the course as to which one's going to work for your particular debt and for your particular situation, but it's the tsunami, avalanche, and snowball.
You know, I really like that tsunami method. And I think, you know, maybe a lot of us would do that naturally, you know, without thinking about it much, but, you know, kind of taking a step back and looking at that, I think, gosh, that is so great because, you know, there's so many issues around money that are very, very emotional for us.
Yes.
And this gets into my next question is, you know, I think the reason a lot of us get into debt is for emotional reasons. And would you agree with that? And you know, kind of beyond that, you know, what else do you see as the reasons why people accumulate debt, especially in our 20s? and gosh, I mean, don't you just wish that that you had the knowledge that you had the knowledge then that you do now, or you wish that you know, people in their young 20s you could just grab them by the collar and say, please listen to me.
No, absolutely. You know, there are a multitude of reasons why people get into debt, and I would have to say, from working with people, that there's a small percentage of people that get into debt because they literally don't have the money to live their lives, and not live their lives in an affluent way. They're living paycheck to paycheck because they actually have to live paycheck to paycheck. Their income is so low. And so even if that was during a period of underemployment, of unemployment, they're playing catch up, you know, that sort of thing. There is a small percentage of people that they're where they're at, emotions or not. That's just what happened. There's a much larger portion of people that have put themselves into debt, and mostly for emotional reasons. And, you know, emotional reasons, I mean, they can just run all over from, you know, buying purchases for your ideal self. You know, we use Pinterest, or we see other people that we say, oh, I like that person. I think they have a great life. I want to be like that person. Mm-hmm. Oh, let's buy products. Let's buy what they have. Let's buy the lifestyle that they have. And somehow we feel like that connects us, and that makes us, you know, on the same level as other people, which of course it doesn't. But from a psychological standpoint, it seems like the shortcut to get to where you want to go, just spend. And then it's sort of this instant gratification thing. So I think that tends to build on itself. And once people get past a certain level of debt, it just becomes like a, oh, well, throw another one on the pile, you know, I'm never getting out of this debt anyway, or whatever. I've already got $6,000 in credit card debt. What's another $100?
What would you say then, you would say your best tips are for staying out of debt? Let's say you've got to a point where pretty much everything is paid off except maybe the mortgage, and you know, you're kind of humming along nicely now. You're on the other side of that. How do we make sure that we don't step backwards and get into that again? Because it is possible that you could be living a financially responsible life, and yet it just happens.
Yeah, it is so important and such a crucial step to get off of the debt loop. And, you know, my husband and I, we sat down and we decided that once we had that debt paid off, that was the end of our debt loop. Anything we were going to buy from there on out had to be saved up for in advance. We do use credit cards, and we do pay them off every month, but we use them for the perks. And it's kind of fun when you get to the other side of the equation where you're using the credit card company instead of them using you. But as far as how to get off of that debt cycle, you know, two things that I think are very important. Actually, we're going to say three. Number one is to make that commitment. You know, make that debt-free vow from the start, that even while you're going through the process, remember the pain that it's putting you through. Remember all of the things that you're not able to do because you're paying, you know, $900 a month to creditors and padding their pockets with your money. Number two, you want to be much more aware moving forward of what you actually make and what you actually spend. And I'm not saying you have to track every penny. I'm not into that myself. I mean, I'm a little bit into it because I'm one of those numbers geeks. but you know, you just need to know that if you make $3,000 per month and you spend $3,001 each month, you're in debt. So as long as you're just aware of that, you know, you can create buckets, basically, like, okay, my variable spending this month for groceries, gas, or whatever, it needs to stay at $400. That's just one bucket. It's not really breaking it down into all these crazy little categories. So just, you know, bringing that awareness or whatnot. And the third thing is that once you get to that debt-free level, and it is sweet, I have to tell you, once you get there, really feel that. I mean, it's an amazing feeling to not owe people money. Now, granted, my husband and I still have a mortgage, and we're trying to decide if we want to pay that down early or not, which is sort of outside of the scope of this conversation. But not owing these creditors is just so freeing. And yeah, instead of paying that money to creditors, we're now paying that money to our savings account. And by seeing that growing and just, you know, working for us, that's all the, you know, motivation you need.
Yeah. You know, a number of years ago, we both paid off our vehicles, and just, you know, not having a car payment is, even though our cars are both, oh gosh, they're both getting on 10 years old and they've got very high miles, you know, still there's just, you know, would I enjoy a new car? Yeah, sure. But there's just no way I would enjoy, you know, the car more than I would having to make those payments. Would you kind of agree with that?
Absolutely. I can't agree with you more. I mean, once you, it does hurt. I have to say this is a funny sort of outcome of this. Being on the other side, when you have to make those big purchases, it does hurt to take that money out of your account and make that payment. But when you get outside of that part, you know, if you're handing over thousands of dollars for a car, if you get outside of the, oh, it's out of my account, that money is gone, and you get back onto the side of, yeah, but I don't have, like, it's pretty and clear. I don't have to send payments into anybody. Mm-hmm. It's going to last me for several years. And, you know, this just happened. When you get into that mentality, it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Amanda, you also wrote an article recently about some questions that to build greater financial intimacy with your partner. I was wondering if you could kind of share some of those questions that you should ask.
Sure. And this article is actually just a really fun one. My friend had given me this thing called a book of questions several years ago, probably about 7 or 8 years ago now. And it's literally a book about these like scenario type questions that they force you in a situation where you have to make judgment calls, and you have to make moral calls, and you have to figure out what you really feel about something because you have to come up with an answer. So I thought it would be so much fun and really thought provoking and really get you, you know, more intimate financially with your partner if you asked some financial scenario questions. For example, and by the way, this is a free download on my website if you would like your own copy. But what about, okay, so you find out that in Mexico, you can have a hernia surgery that's going to cost you $10,000 less than having it in the United States. And by the way, this is a true story. So would you do it? So now when you're thinking about that question, you know, your partner or you, whoever's answering, all of a sudden you have to start thinking, you know, trust. Okay, do I trust, you know, doctors in other countries? Is $10,000 worth the potential of a risk? Is, you know, what about insurance? What about this? And you're really having to sort of work through this.
Yeah, no kidding. That I'm just trying to think of my own answer for that. I, you know, and medical tourism is a big thing.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely is. And it's just something, you know, to get you and your partner talking about something else on a road trip, on a date night, whatnot. Another question, this is just sort of a fun one, but it involves some, you know, something you might not know about your partner. You could ask, okay, so we just went grocery shopping. Our cupboards are stacked. We've got snacks galore, whatnot. Then we get a knock on the front door and it's a Girl Scout. And she wants to sell us cookies. Do you buy the Thin Mints or do you not? And why? You know, sounds like a silly question, but then you start thinking, you're like, how big of a giving heart do I have? How big of a giving heart does my partner have? Is he more into willy-nilly spending when we don't need to? Or is it more of a, you know, moral thing where he wants to help out a little girl who's trying to raise for an organization? I mean, these questions can just go down so many different roads. And if, you know, money seems to be a difficult topic to broach with maybe your fiance or your boyfriend or your, you know, whoever you're with at the moment. And so these questions are meant to kind of just open you up and start down that road.
That's awesome. How about one more? Amanda, give me one more.
Okay. You've lost your job and lined up your next one already. Congrats, by the way. Your new health benefits begin in 60 days, leaving you uninsured for 1 month. Do you get a temporary health plan to cover the gap, or do you risk it?
You know, and it's funny because I really would have to think about that. I you know what, as you know, I've got three kids. I don't think there's a way I could go without for a few months. If it were only me and I was single, yeah, I'd probably just, you know, I'd probably just skip it. I know my grandma, oh my gosh, my grandma has never owned health insurance. I mean, just some people just, you know, throw caution to the wind there. Yeah,
wow.
That's...
And do you see right there, that one little question, I just learned so much about you and
your
values and you're, you know, even if you, let's say, you know, you were single at the moment, I would know that if you had kids, you actually would think about that kind of thing. Like, there's so many things that come up from these questions.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting too, because I was actually thinking about this, you know, when I was, when my wife and I were dating, we actually went skydiving for a date. And so my kids asked, well, are you guys ever going to do that again? And I go, no, I'm not. You know, it's probably not, is, you know, statistically, it's probably not as dangerous as you might think, but still, now as a parent, I'm just not willing to take that risk. I just wouldn't do things now that I would have done when I was, you know, young, single, and crazy, or, you know, it was just my wife and I or something.
Sure. And let me ask you this, though. So what if you were dating someone and you asked them that question and then they said they would do it with kids? That would start you thinking, right?
Yeah, right, right. And it's like, do you know, you've got the care of little ones. You have to think just beyond yourself. I don't know.
Yeah. So it's just a list of 19 different questions just like those. And it should be fun and it should be thought provoking. And if nothing else, it should just sort of start breaking that ice.
That sounds great. And just for those listening, I'll make sure to include a link to that as well so that you can download that. And Amanda, what are some of the financial tools that you use? Tools, technology, apps, you know, money-saving tools, you know, more money-earning things. You know, what do you keep in your toolbox?
That's a great question. My toolbox is humongous. Trying to think of some good ones. As far as actually managing your money and making it just stupid easy to manage, that's what I love, things that just make things stupid easy to manage. One free service that I'm signed up for is Personal Capital. And what they do is, let's say you're invested in your company's 401k, and you signed up for a fund or whatnot, or maybe you have your own IRA or, you know, just your regular bank accounts as well. This service, you associate all of those accounts, every single financial account that you have, to your dashboard. So first off, it just aggregates everything so you can see it all in one spot. And secondly, what it does is for the things that you're invested in, it actually breaks it down so that you know what the heck these funds are invested in. Mm-hmm. And I know that may sound ridiculous that I don't know what my funds are invested in, but it's like, how do you know how much percentage you're paying per year over, like, across the board on all of your funds? Or how do you know what fees across the board you're paying from every single account? It's going to give you actual snapshots of, these are the fees you're paying per year. This is, you know, these are the managing fees you're paying per year. It's such and such percentage. And by the way, you should probably do better than that. So that's a really great tool for people who maybe they have target funds in their retirement. Maybe they have, you know, 20 different personal financial accounts and they just need to simplify it all. And they also send you, it's pretty nifty, they send you an email once a week. And you might want to turn the emails off if you're like, risk averse, because you'll get an email saying, hey, your balanced portfolio is down by 2.16%.
Yeah.
But also fun when you get those that say, hey, your portfolio balance is up by 3%.
So, you know, based on you using that, have you learned that fees are something that you ought to pay attention to? Because I think sometimes people might just assume that, well, fees are just pretty standard and there's not a lot of variation there, and that you can pretty much just accept whatever it is that your broker or your fund manager is, you know, taxing you with, I suppose.
Yes, fees are so important. They are one of the silent robbers of your retirement, let's put it that way. So the difference between a 2% management fee and a 1% management fee is tens of thousands of dollars. Mm. And it's even potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars. So fortunately, I'm a financial geek and I learned early on that the sort of gold standard, what you should go for in any investment that you have, is less than 1% in management fees. And I personally use Vanguard. They are known in the investing industry to be low on fees, and they're a great company. They've been around for a long while as well. But when you put all these things into the Personal Capital tool, you know, and you associate it, and you see, okay, maybe you're paying 2.5% in fees, change something. But until you see that you're paying 2.5% interest in fees, and quite frankly, those websites make it very difficult to go into each of your accounts and figure out what the heck you are paying,
then you don't know what to work on.
So it's a great tool.
That's great. Okay, well, good. I'll make sure to include a link to Personal Capital as well in the notes. And then also, I noticed that you've written about gift cards and how you've been able to kind of leverage those.
Yeah, I'm a huge gift card fan. You know, places that I like to earn them for free. And I do that through places like swagbucks.com. Google actually owns Swagbucks. So if you're going to search the internet all day anyway, you might as well use Swagbucks and earn points for it. And then you can get gift cards for it. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. And you can actually earn money just for searching. I mean, it really works.
Yeah, it's insane. I've gotten over $500 in gift cards in the last year and a half.
Wow.
And it's literally a search engine. I mean, you literally just search. That's it. If you want to take surveys, they have little buttons that you can, but no, I don't do surveys. I don't do the coupon thing. I don't do any of that. I just search because I have to search to write articles and I earn money.
Well, that sounds easy. I like Stupid Bunny, where it just you earn for doing something automatic.
It was absolutely easy. And I also earn, like I said, we use credit cards in we're what people call bang for your buck consumer category, where we take advantage of credit card companies and banks instead of the other way around. So, you know, if you have a credit card, you charge your normal expenses on it. You don't, you know, inflate your costs. You just charge your normal expenses on it. You pay it off in that grace period every month. You still get those reward points. So we get hundreds of dollars in free gift cards every year just for spending on what we would be anyway.
Wow. I mean, and again, I think that if anybody were to have someone come up to them, put $200-$300 cash in their hand, I don't think that they would say, oh, no, that's okay. I'm not really into money. You know, we would take that money. And so, you know, I guess what you're saying is, you know, by just doing a little bit of learning on this and how you can leverage some of these programs that are available, if you're in a position where you can, then it's just free money.
Yes, I am all about putting a little bit of setup in the beginning and reaping rewards for years. So, you know, sign up for Swagbucks and then it's set, it's done. Sign up for that credit card, move your budget over to it, you're done. Every time you make a purchase, you get rewards. We don't have time to do these little, I used to do a survey site where I think I calculated once that I was earning $4.27 per hour. You can bet what I cut out of my life right there.
Wow, yeah.
You know, so these things that I'm doing already, let's just make it profitable for me. Why not?
Amanda, what lessons should we be teaching the next generation, or should we be teaching our children?
I'm a huge proponent of putting some money into a child's hands at whatever time you think, you know, whatever age you think is appropriate, and getting them to really manage it. So, you know, I did this for my niece and nephew last year, where I got these really cool piggy banks that they're separated into four different slots. And one is for saving, and one is for spending, and one is for a goal, and one is for donating. And I sat down and just had a, you know, probably their first financial talk ever. They're, well, my nephew's 5, but the other one is 11. So, I gave them a little bit of money to start with. And I said, let's talk about these different categories. Let's talk about why it's important that when you get money, you know, you can appropriate it to not just that new iPod that you want, but maybe to donate something towards Christmas, maybe to save part of that money because you're working on a bigger goal, or you don't know what's going to happen, you know, 5 weeks from now. You can bring it down to your child's level. But I think, you know, having an allowance tied to some sort of extra chores, that sort of thing, and then teaching them and letting them live the mistakes. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to buy something that is crappy and they're going to be upset about it, you know? And it's like, you can take that opportunity instead of maybe buying them something to make them smile again. You can take that opportunity and ask them, how does that make you feel? You worked really hard for that money, and you know, you don't like what you bought. And do you think it was really a good idea to save up 7 weeks of your allowance for that product? And really just open that conversation so that they start seeing that there are rewards and consequences to their decisions.
Well, I love that. I think that's fantastic. And I couldn't agree with you more that how important it is to, even though, you know, we love our children, we want to see them happy. We want to see, you know, we don't like to see them when they fall down and skin their knee. Yet we know that oftentimes life is the best teacher, and you know, allowing the kids to our kids to make mistakes just so that they can experience that and hopefully remember that for a lot longer than if we were to just kind of teach them a lesson one time. So I really appreciate what you just shared.
Thank you. I think what parents need to remember, because it can be squeamish feeling, you know, to see your child crying, to see your child so disappointed with those cute little eyes, you know, and you feel so bad for them, and you know you could fix it so quickly. I think it's very, very important for parents to realize that these little mistakes that you can let them live and you can let them see now are nothing compared to what they could make as an adult, because those lessons haven't been taught.
Well, Amanda, thank you so much for spending your time with me and with our audience. And I certainly picked up a lot of great information. I've been taking notes myself, and so I appreciate everything that you've shared with us today.
Oh, I so appreciate being here, Josh. Thank you so much.
And I hope you enjoyed that interview with Amanda from frugalconfessions.com. Again, if you need any of the links that we mentioned on this show, it's very, very simple. Just go to savingsangel.com, click on the podcast button, and look for show number 13. And I've got links to Amanda's site. I've got links to the money questions to rev up your daily dialogue with your partner. I've got a link to Personal Capital, which will actually make a $20 donation to Habitat for Humanity, which I think is really cool. And then, of course, Swagbucks. And I've got three different links that Amanda gave me if you would like to attend free movie screenings in your area. So again, savingsangel.com, click on podcasts and look for show number 13. Lucky show number 13. Also, if you have a favorite blogger, if you have a favorite podcaster that you'd like me to get together with, reach out to them, reach out to me, connect the both of us. And I think it would just be a great conversation. And with that, I hope you've had a great week. I hope you're going to have an excellent weekend. I hope you'll have a great Friday evening, or whatever evening it is for you tonight. And with that, my friends, have a great day. And live abundantly.